All right. Let's see, do we have a quorum yet?
Three.
No, not yet.
Stanley, you're going to have two votes.
Right, sure. I don't know if the rules allow for proxy votes now that I think about it. I don't think they do.
How is everybody this morning? Up and at 'em.
Yeah.
There we go. Now we have a quorum. Good morning, Cassie.
Hey, Cassie. Good
morning.
Your volume is low.
Oh, interesting. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. I guess we'll wait a few more minutes. Joel is here as an attendee, and I'm promoting him now.
Okay. Okay, I guess we might as well get going. As you know, Jennifer is not here today, so she asked me to sort of run this meeting. So I guess I'll call the meeting to order. There were some additions to the agenda. I think we'll sort of move those down a little further to the bottom. You know, once we get through some of these other things. So does anybody have any additions to the minutes from last meeting? Does somebody want to move to approve the minutes?
So moved.
All right.
Okay.
Just a second. Sorry. That's my grandson in the background.
We have a critic, huh?
We have a critic, yeah.
I might have the same situation, Stanley, because the schools are out today.
Schools are out today. I'm hanging with little Arlo. So so let's see. Did somebody move?
I did.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor? Raise your hand. The minutes are approved. Public forum. We have a few visitors today. I know Andy's here, Peter. I emailed Aaron last week saying that I'd like to have John Q give us a little 10-minute presentation about his proposed mural in the Elks building. And so he's online here. I think we could just get into that immediately. I've seen preliminary plans. I think John has also met with the Historic Commission, and they're kind of excited about the project. So I'm just going to turn it over to John, and if you could just go ahead, John.
Yeah, I've gone ahead and promoted John to a panelist, and he should be able to unmute and turn on his camera.
Got it.
There he is. There's John.
I had to press a separate icon there. So what if I could share the screen, would that sound, you guys? And very nice to meet all of you too. This is a little early for me. I tend to paint late. So I, let's see if I can get this up on here and get into a thing here. All right. Can everyone see that? Okay. That's the image. Okay. So I just want to show you a couple. Oh, we got to slow this down a little bit. A couple images. I don't know if you're familiar with, probably you aren't, with my work. And I do kind of this architectural illusion type style painting, trompe l'oeil painting. And I've been doing it for a long time. And like, for example, this first image has the building on the left is the before picture. And then the building on the right is smoothing out all those bricks and then repainting bricks to create this illusion of this kind of homage to the 20s. There's a speakeasy that actually, this is near Chicago, across the street from this is a speakeasy. And then we have these flappers that are kind of hanging out in front of a Georgia O'Keeffe painting. And there's other references to, that's some of the painting process of some of the flappers. Other references to things that were part of that era, like they're right, you can see it, like this is the world's tallest speakeasy with these rotating walls going into it. Another example, this is something I just did this last summer in Hermosa Beach, and again, it's for some reason it was a popular subject going back to the 20s and what it was like on Hermosa Beach with the Biltmore Hotel that used to exist there, and what the scene was in the 1920s, probably shortly after their pandemic too. And so just, you know, everything's flat. And I don't know, you probably can't see the right side of that canvas, but there's a little thing where the architecture breaks the picture plane just a little bit. I do a few things to help mess with viewers' perception of what's real and what isn't. I mean, that's kind of the shtick is I found that people everyone likes being tricked a little bit, not just the anamorphic thing on the sidewalk where you kind of walk around to get this thing and make it work so it works on your phone, but to actually be fooled by an architectural illusion. People tend to bond with the piece after they've been fooled. They go, oh my God, I thought that was real. And then they tend to bond with the piece and they're invited to explore and go into the concept more. I found it's a very good format for communicating with a large audience. I just want to show you this too. Here's an example up here. Can you see my cursor? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That this is an example of breaking the picture plane and just a little bit, still on the same plane, but once in a while, if you break the picture plane a little bit, it further heightens that sense of the building feeling like it's coming apart or something's rolling off. I won't get too stuck on this. This is probably the closest mural to Cure that I've done. It's at it's like the entrance to the university at California State University, Chico. And this is kind of the one that actually got my career going in the first place because I got a lot of attention and the universities used this quite a bit. And it's a great place because it's between the downtown and the university campus when you come in. So it's kind of like a gateway thing. So, and I also wanted to cite this mural. I'll get into the proposal of the sketch here in a second, but this is, I think, a good example of the kind of illusion that I'm proposing for the Elks wall there, Elks Lodge wall. It's it goes back in and it kind of comes out. And I also wanted to share with you too that I did hire a glass artist to get this model of this wave. So models are very important to me. And that's one thing I have not developed yet for this mural is a model to help see where all the shadows fall. You can see how the shadows are falling on the top of this wave and there's perspective lines. There's all these shadows on the side. Those are the kind of things that have yet to be developed. I'm more showing you the, some of this stuff that I'm proposing to put into this piece. All right. So here's the Elks. And by the way, you guys can interrupt me anytime if you want to. This is the Elks Lodge wall. And when I first came into Ashland and I started driving around, I'm going, I want this to be my forever place now. I sold my house up in Lake Tahoe and I wanted to be part of this. I've always gravitated toward this community And I was looking for walls, and this I think is the best wall in Ashland. It's a nice perpendicular wall. It's a nice surface. It could be lit from below. And I think it would have a kind of placemaking impact. And not to mention that it's perpendicular to traffic. So the illusion could be held up on a pretty high level. Here's a close-up of that. So then I had a really good meeting with the Historical Commission, that this idea of inside here, even though it's painted blue, is like the inside of the first Chautauqua Dome. And it's like these eggs breaking and hatching, I guess is a better word, coming out to the second, or well, I guess really the third Chautauqua Dome, and kind of giving birth to this whole Shakespeare thing without really, you know, talking specifically about Shakespeare here that much, at least. And inside here, you have this Lithia Park type thing, and you've got some stags, and we'll probably throw an elk in there too, because that's one thing that I talked with the elks people about, is including at least one elk for them. But the thing I was really trying to drive at here more than anything is this historical element, but this is also this center where Lithia Park is now, where the Chautauqua Park was then, and before that was an early trading post and village for the Shasta and Takelma Native Americans. Even before we got here, it's kind of an epicenter for Lithia Park, and it's a great kind of ground zero for this, like ground zero is planet, the right word to use. But I also started thinking about, for me, I remember coming to Shakespeare when I was 8 years old and not really understanding the Shakespearean language while seeing a play with my parents, but how enchanted I was with this area. And I think enchantment is it has a spiritual vibe, but I think it also has a really enchanting kind of vibe to it. I'll just kind of move forward here. Oh, this is the inside of the Chautauqua Dome. So speaking of enchanting, this idea of almost like a Maxfield Parrish setting in the middle, I think of, there's actually an example I have up here. There's the broken egg. Yeah, there's the painting Enchantment. And I'm not necessarily saying that this is Ashland, but I like the energy of this. And if I think of the feeling I remember as a kid about Ashland and Lithia Park in this area, is this sense of enchantment. It's a wonderful place. There's this energy going on, the thespians and the artists and this cultural vibe that exceeds beyond any other small town kind of energy that I've ever experienced before. And I kind of start going with that. Okay, so here's another Maxfield Parrish, where this starts to feel a little more like we're in Lithia Park. And this is kind of the energy I was trying to generate into the middle of this thing. And of course, that's the what I kind of settled with as far as a possible center of this, where this woman's kind of hanging out Lithia Park. And there's this sense of enchantment going on with this. And I know this is not the right one. I'm working with Peter Finkel and going through some archives, but another thing I would like to include into this center of this dome thing in this Lithia Park kind of space that's inside this Chautauqua Dome thing is a nod to the Native Americans that were here, you know, way before we were, and those two tribes in particular. And I know this is not the right tribe, but accuracy and a nod to that, what life was like in here before these domes were created and started developing Lithia Park more and Shakespeare. And I also threw in a couple of these like theater lights, because I thought that something like that inside this concept would kind of create this chicken and egg thing going on. Okay, it's a town that has theater, and we have, it's almost like this theater thing going on about the story of this particular part of Ashland with the park and the Chautauqua domes. And maybe I could even have a reference to, oh my God, it's escaping me right now. The guy that came up with the Shakespeare thing in the first place, looking at the foundation here of the second Chautauqua Dome, I think that's what he was looking at. He says, hey, this looks like the Globe Theater. And so without necessarily lifting a Shakespearean finger, we could have some references to where this is going. And just the flavor, the like pre-Raphaelite type of flavor, Maxwell Parrish flavor, I think is and that could even be like a paper moon up there inside the concept that would kind of add to this theatrical quality. And then I don't know if you guys can see on the right of this, there's a reference to Mount Ashton. I don't think McLaughlin is the right choice here, just because you can't really see that from Ashton. I probably would put something like Pilot Rock up here or something like that instead. But it, just a couple things that surround this that add to this kind of theatrical ambiance and decor. And they inside the Elks Lodge, it does have this type of glass ceiling in their main lodge. And I thought that this is kind of a nice echo of the dome thing as well. Maybe even slightly reminiscent of Crater Lake on kind of a subconscious level. But so that's it. I mean, it doesn't, you know, we don't have the high illusion yet because I haven't really developed the model with the shadows, but I wanted to see what you guys thought about this concept so far. And I'm pretty excited about it. It went really well with the historical commission. And I just really would, more than anything else that's going on in my life with my projects, this is the most important thing to me, because I'm, you know, I consider this my home now, and I'm just very enthused about it. So
thanks very much, Sean. Does anybody have any questions? You want to stop the screen share, Aaron? Or John, could you kill the
slides? Sure.
So does anybody have any questions for John about this? And I'm wondering where you are on this project. Have you secured funding? What's the your pathway going forward?
So there's some things I am kind of figuring out as I go here, and I'm hoping for other suggestions too. But I know that there's a little bit with you guys, and I know this wasn't a public offering to do a public art project. The Elks Lodge has agreed, they paid for the sketch to begin with, and they said that they're willing to certainly do fundraising to contribute into this project. So, and I've talked to a few people where there might be possibilities of some patronage and funding, that has not been completely determined yet. So
do you have a fundraising goal?
Well, it's going to probably take at least $150,000 between the skim coating and all the work preparing the wall. That's a low guess, but that's approximately what it would be.
Okay.
How long does it usually take from start to finish of this type of project?
This is a pretty detailed one. It's going to take probably a few months in my studio, because I would do the middle part of it here. I have a big studio, by the way. I don't know if you all knew that, but it's on Hellman Street and with a really big wall. And I tend to do my murals on this material first. And then, and I even have a scrolling system, so I could actually fit something about this size. And then transport it to on location. Here I would probably do a little more on location since it's right here. But I don't know. I'm just guessing 5-6 months for the full thing with all the detail. Most of it not necessarily on location, but certainly a lot of it at the last part. And I think that's important too, to have some of it on location, because it creates a buzz and people like seeing the process unfold and the so a mix. But I'm going to guess 6 months, possibly more.
I would assume you'd have to really plan out good weather months. You don't want to be out there in the rain.
Yeah, but because I can do a lot of it in the studio, the window gets much smaller. So it's not quite as, and let's say I did do it in the spring or something next year, or maybe late summer or something like that here. If there was rain, I'm usually working on dovetailing in another project. So I wouldn't be like just sitting there, you know, when's the rain going to stop? So those are good questions though.
Oh, I wish we had thoughts like that. When's the rain going to stop?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I know. Oh, don't stop.
We should be so lucky.
Ken, did you have a comment?
I did. John, thank you so much. It's very intriguing and has a lot going for it. I wanted to get a sense for your progress. Do you need the funds before you can move forward, or is it a work in progress and it's interactive with fundraising?
I think that it would be a work in progress and interactive with fundraising, because I don't expect, I think developing a more realistic sketch is, because a picture usually gets people pretty excited. If it's like, wow, we could have that, you know, if it's more developed. So I'm kind of figuring this one out as it goes, to be honest with you. Most of my other public art projects are I'm doing a thing in Washington, D.C. right now with Mike Milken, and a lot of things are international public art competitions, and the funding is not in my court, but obviously here there's a little more creative approach to that. So I wish I could answer you more articulately, but I don't think I need it all, you know, to begin with. And I realize that is something that I'll have to work with, however organic that is.
Just as a follow-on, do you have either individuals or a group who are responsible for fundraising so that it's not just you?
Well, the Elks have, they've said that they'll do fundraising for this, but I don't think they're thinking the whole thing. So so I'm still trying to figure out how that balances out. So I wish I had a little, you know, more sureness with that footing on that. But I've been kind of putting this ahead and trying to figure out things, how it can be put together as we go. Is kind of almost a reverse way of, you know, working with public art. So I'm not usually the one doing this part of it, but I would be involved with this one. At this,
I'm thinking of finding someone who would take that responsibility, or
like a champion,
couple, exactly, and somebody with local knowledge of sources.
Well, it's the best thing I've got so far is the Elks, and they're pretty excited about this project, and they didn't think this kind of thing could be done, and now that they realize that it's possible, that I think there's a level of enthusiasm, and I do think that they have a lot of connections with people in this town that might, you know, like the people that help fund the Tea Garden type. I'm not sure exactly what that looks like yet. So,
okay. Thanks a lot, John. That was really interesting. And, you know, please keep us informed. You're aware of the process for murals. There's, I think I forwarded that document to you. But the Arts Commission does need to approve what you're doing. But I'm pretty excited about this project. I think it'd be pretty cool. So.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think it's wonderful. I love your presentation. I think it's going to be really, really something to see.
Oh, good. Thank you. That's great to hear. And I guess that's it. So if you have any other questions, feel free to get a hold of me after the fact too. And let me know if there's anything I can do.
I just want to second what Laura said. I was going to say the same thing. Thank you for coming. And I'm excited. I was very excited when I looked on your website. So
I'll
be looking forward to seeing you again. And I live down the street. Maybe I'll stop by your studio sometime and knock on the door and see.
Oh, please do. I tend to work a little late. So this is early for me. But right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
Sure.
Okay. So we're still in public forum. Does anybody else? Yeah, Aaron.
Yeah, I was just going to ask if you wanted to check in if Andrew or Peter wanted to talk.
Does anybody have anything?
Andrew, Peter, you both have the ability to unmute if you would like to. All right. It sounds like neither one of them want to take us up on that opportunity. So okay. We can move on.
So looks like Peter. Oh, okay. There. Yeah. All right. So liaison reports, Stephanie, you're up.
Okay, well, we had a very good presentation by the students from Ashland High School on the project with the canoe, and they did a great job. It is scheduled now on the look ahead. So that's happened. And in terms of what's happening with the council, I would say that right now the biggest issue is the budget in the general fund, and some cuts have been proposed as beginning someplace beginning to start. Also, there's a survey that's going out that should be ready in about May. It's really looking at general fund, parks, police, public works, and also fire. So the city, Joe Lazard, has asked each department to present what they think a 5 to 10% cut would be in revenue. And so that's probably the most important thing or immediate thing happening in at the council right now.
Okay, any questions for Stephanie about that? Aaron.
Hello. I would follow on with what Councillor Seffinger said about AHS. They are scheduled presently for the 4:19 business meeting. It's a very full agenda. Jennifer is not available to attend. Cassie, I know she reached out to you. Were you able to be the commissioner to represent that?
Thank you for asking, Aaron. I was going to bring that up. That's the only night I'm in a class, and I've sent an email to my professor to see if I could log into the meeting and just pop out of the room. Destiny just sent a message asking if she could be added to the meeting. So I'll get back to you, Aaron. And one of my other thoughts was if I could submit written testimony or video. I wasn't sure if that was acceptable.
Yeah, so because we're coming before council, we really do want it to be a commissioner. Maybe we can pick this up later in the meeting because I don't want to take up too much time now. But that is something that is going before council. One other item that actually I'm surprised Councillor Seffinger didn't mention is that, from my understanding, council's going back in person starting on that meeting. Oh, but it's okay. Going to be a hybrid environment where the only people in person will be council and some key staff, and most people presenting will still be remote. Councillor Seffinger, I'm correct on that. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so I say that to say this, because I know there's been continuing questions of when or if we're going to go back in person. And the answer that I presently have for you, that I would have for my other advisory commissions too, is that just like at the beginning of the pandemic, we're going to follow council. So, you know, this is going to be the first step of seeing what hybrid looks at like, and we'll know more soon. And that is probably all I have to say at this step of the game.
Can I ask one more question quickly related to that? Do you know if the agenda is out yet for the meeting on Tuesday, just in terms of seeing if I'm able to come? It wasn't out when I looked.
So typically the goal is that the council agenda and advisory commission agendas get posted a week in advance. I would hope that the council agenda would be posted soon. On the look ahead, in the sequence that it was in, it was towards the end of the meeting. So it would be later rather than earlier, but you never know with those things.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron. I don't think Jim Lewis is with us, so we'll move on to other business. Next item is nominations and vote for new chair. I think everybody knows Jennifer has got to bow out, and so we need somebody to step up. I withdrew my name from consideration, even though I had a few people suggest. I'm just way too busy to do it. So I just wanted to open that up and see if anybody would like to nominate a commissioner to step up to that position. Yeah. You're muted, Laura.
Got it. Thanks. I would like to nominate Ken to be the new chairperson. He's got a lengthy resume of experience, and he's expressed interest. And I think he would be a great great person to step into that role right now.
Any a discussion on that?
Go ahead, Stanley.
Oh, I'll just say I think Ken would be great, but go ahead, Cassie.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ken, you fill in all these gaps, and I have been very amazed at how much your heart is in this commission, and I think that Laura's nomination is, I'm totally behind it. So.
Okay. Do you have any comments, Ken? Are you open to stepping up?
I am open, and I would be humbled. I would also, if this comes to pass, rely on all of you, because there are big shoes to fill here, and I would need all the support possible.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
So we have a nomination. I guess we need a second. Is that right, Aaron?
Yeah, did you go formally? Sure.
I second. Yeah.
Thank you, Cassie. All in favor of electing Ken, the new chairperson for the Arts Commission, raise your hand. The motion passes.
And this is to begin in May of 23, is that right?
I believe it was for the next meeting.
not 23. Okay. So I would want to have, if possible, I'd like to have some time with Aaron and Councilman Steffinger, Councilperson Steffinger, just so I can understand the protocols.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm sure Jennifer will give you whatever support you need. So, but anyway, congratulations. We're very happy. I'm very happy.
I think it's a case of everybody step back one, and there I was.
Yeah, right. And there you were.
Thank you very much.
Sometimes that's the way it works, you know.
Yep.
Great. Okay, let's move on. The PSA work plan, project updates, Golden Connections. Has everybody had a chance to go down there and take a look and everything? It's great. I love it. So we've got this event coming up on the 23rd. Is that on Saturday, the 23rd, correct? So I know that Jennifer put out a bunch of requests, and she sent me an email that sort of details where we're at in terms of the ceremony. I guess Jennifer is going to bring a table and tablecloth. Jennifer is going to bring refreshments, which are cupcakes, salty treats, peelable oranges in small bowls, seltzer water, napkins, and cups. Does that sound good to everybody? Do we need to add anything? Or
sounds great.
Yep. Yeah, she'll be there at 11:30, and Laura is going to show up at 11:30 as well to help set up. Ken is bringing a giant red ribbon and giant scissors, right, Ken?
I don't know how giant the scissors are, but yes.
Good. we need folding chairs for people that can't stand. Trying to think, do we have any folding chairs, Laura, in the shop? I don't think we do.
I don't remember seeing any. I can poke around, but I don't.
Yeah, it'd be nice if we had, I don't know, 7 or 8 folding chairs for people that need to sit. Does the city have a resource like that, Aaron, or not?
I can ask. I would presume that that warehouse where the medallions are coming from must have some folding chairs, but I would need to ask with Mike.
Okay.
I have a couple.
Parks also may have some.
As a last resort, I have stackable chairs, those plastic kind, but I don't have folding chairs, and I could bring them in my car if needed.
Yeah, we have, I know at the shop we have stackable chairs, but they're red, they're cloth covered, and if it's rainy, they get all wet, so I'm not really sure those would work, but yeah, let's say this, if anybody has some portable chairs, just bring them. Like if you have a couple, you can bring them. I think I have something around my house that would probably work. And just as long as we have some there, I think we're probably okay. Right.
Stanley, I can show up at 11:30 as well.
Oh, that'd be perfect. Well, I'm going to be there too. So Mike Morrison is going to bring the medallions. I'm not really sure how he's going to display those.
My understanding is that they're going to be put on the ground, okay. Prop them up with some wood. The idea of putting these on tables was just deemed, I mean, they're considerable.
They're really heavy.
Yeah.
Which is good. I'm so glad that they're going to be there because, you know, that sort of ties everything together. And Aaron's going to be out of town. So I think we're pretty set there. As far as the installation, and my understanding is Jennifer and Dave will both be there. Is that correct?
Yes, it is correct.
We don't need PA or anything like that, do we? I mean,
there's a small sound system with a microphone that's going to come over with Public Works as well.
Perfect. Okay. So I think we're set. The big question mark. Yeah, Ken, go ahead.
As a footnote, Aaron sent out a fairly lengthy history regarding the original proposal for additional medallions. It would be helpful, I think, Aaron, if you could put that on the Dropbox for the Public Art Commission, because it's the historical knowledge of where we are and how we got to where we are.
Yeah, I've never interacted with that resource. I'll have to get the link from Jennifer, but I can.
Yeah, great. It'd be helpful, I think, going forward. Some of us were discussing that would have been good to have in the very beginning.
Well, and that's a good segue to talking about the plaque. Right. I know there's some confusion and some suggestion that the verbiage needs to change. Because I think the original verbiage was referencing the five medallions when there's actually plans for way more. And so I guess I'd like for thoughts on that, whether we need to change the verbiage to either include plaques that we don't really have funding for yet, or just be a little more vague about the number of final medallions. Does anybody have thoughts on that?
We did rewrite it, Ken. I'm assuming maybe you have it, but we just completely removed it, so it may be worth sharing the rewrite.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and I'm both you and Joel might speak to this, but Destiny revised the words so that the plaque number is taken out. Their words are shorter, and I think, Joel, you were going to look to getting a quote using the revised words.
Yeah, that's right. Once everybody confirms that the updated text is good for them, and then also we're removing the map and QR code, so it's basically just going to be text, artist, done. So once everybody kind of signs off on what the updated text is going to be, then, yeah, we can...
Was that sent around?
What?
Does everybody have the revised words?
I don't have them in front of me. Didn't we vote to include a QR code in the last meeting?
We did, our discussion was to take that out, so yeah. It's very clean. And if we need a motion to revise that, we could do that. It'd probably be helpful if we could get on the screen the wording that we ended up with.
Can somebody share a screen with that
yeah, wording? I haven't seen that. I don't know where to look for that.
I resent it to Ken. Let me see if I can.
I'm going to go look for it.
While they're looking for that, Aaron, I just sent you the Dropbox information. Okay, great.
Thank you.
How do I have it in my email? Can somebody tell me how to share it?
Every panelist has the ability to share screen right now.
At the bottom there, it's got a share screen button.
It's green.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to leave my email to get to that. So I guess I'm...
I have it. Do you want me to pull it up?
That'd be great. That'd be great. Okay. Oh, I see how it is. Yeah. There we go.
Perfect.
Okay. Can you guys see that?
Yeah.
So red is new.
Why don't you read it, Destiny?
You want me to read it?
Yeah. Cool.
I can do that. All right. So this sculpture, Golden Connections, represents the identification of various parts of Ashland that come from the historic origins of the city. Golden Connections is one of four central hubs that recognize the unique history of Ashland and help to put it on the map. Its placement in Ashland's railroad district serves as a historic marker and wayfinding project to provide a connection to the history of Ashland on today's landscape. Accompanying the sculpture are medallions inlaid throughout the railroad district that commemorate historic sites of Ashland. The artist explains, the Golden Connection merges a trio of powerful symbols to tell the story of how the railroad spurred a huge transformation in Ashland when in 1887, the Southern Pacific chose the town as a main stop between their Portland-San Francisco line with a full-service maintenance yard, as well as an offering of gratitude and forgiveness to the Chinese workers who worked under difficult conditions to build these tracks. I do not know how to pronounce any of that, so...
Oh, yeah, est omnibus in partes tres. That's the Latin. That's a joke.
that's not actually there.
That will not be there on the...
Okay. But could you translate that for us, Ken?
France is divided into three parts.
Oh, cool. Well, so I guess...
Need a motion on the words?
Yeah, would somebody like to move to not only change the verbiage, but also the elimination of the QR code? I think the issues with the QR code were that it would weather and eventually not work. Aaron, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to make it a point that it mentions one of four hub sculptures, and this is presently one of what may hopefully be four hub sculptures in the future. It sort of has the same problem of referencing the five medallions.
Well, it does say it doesn't reference as I'm remembering, it does not reference four hub sculptures. It references four historic districts.
Correct.
I don't think that's what it said. It said one of four hubs.
All right. I don't know why I'm not sharing anymore, but you're correct.
I stopped your sharing so that we could see the boxes again. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it says Golden Connections is one of four central hubs that recognize the unique history of Ashland. So that's incorrect.
Well, so I mean, it's the hope that Golden Connections will one day be one of four hubs. But presently, it is the first of what we hope might be four hub sculptures.
Right. But I see what you're saying. It does kind of have that same problem. We don't have funding yet for any of the other four. I mean, we hope to. I hope to champion that effort. But the question is, do we need to be even vaguer there?
Aaron, is that your recommendation, that we make it less reference to the other hubs?
You know, I just wanted to bring it to, it jumped out at me during the reading, so I just wanted to bring it to the group's attention.
Well, as a reader, I would wonder, well, where are the others? It's a good question. Oh, there's other ones? Yeah.
I but agree, but at the same time, I feel like it's so vague, like, what's a hub? So are we talking about like a district of Ashland, like as a hub of the city, or are we talking about another sculpture? It's vague enough where we didn't use the word sculpture that it could probably fly, but we could make it even vaguer and pull it out altogether.
So, but, I mean, I guess if I were to have a suggestion, you know, we have four historic districts. That's something that's going to make sense to everyone. It is the hub. Perhaps we could say it's the hub to the historic district. It's the first hub sculpture or something to that effect. And I'm sorry if I'm trying to get into the middle of the wordsmithing of it. It's just because we've had so much talk about where this project goes from here.
Yeah.
Ken,
go ahead.
For me, I would just take it out. Golden Connections recognizes the unique history of Ashland. Just take that phrase out, is one of the central hubs. That would make it completely vague, and it would save us money because there's not so many letters.
I don't think it works that way.
There's a comment from Andy that says the hub is just the central part of a district, not a sculpture. And to me, that would argue with just leaving the verbiage the way it is, because we're not saying four other sculptures, we're saying four other hubs. Right?
Well, but if it's not a sculpture, just not reference to the sculpture, then it doesn't make sense. Golden Connections is one of four central hubs, is part. I'd say just leave it out.
Yeah, it does say Golden Connections is one of four central hubs. Well, the Golden Connection is not the hub.
Right.
To Andy's point, that's a little bit confusing.
Yeah.
Four central hub. So again, I would just say Golden Connection recognizes the unique history of Ashland.
Andy wants to talk or say something.
Yeah, go ahead and promote Andy if you could. Thanks. Hey, Andy, you're on.
You're muted.
Can you hear us, Andy? Is he muted, Aaron?
Oh, Aaron's muted too.
Yeah.
Okay, you should have me now.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, just in the original project, the hubs were just referring to a centralized location in each of the four districts. And it's part of the master plan of marking Ashland places. It's eventually where a sculpture would go, but I don't believe that narrative comments anything about sculptures. It's just that that location is the first of the hubs. And I think that's totally correct, that it implies that the project is larger. And I think it's more than satisfactory. I think it explains very well the start of it.
Well, I'll comment on that, Andy. I think what we need to do, I mean, to me, the problematic verbiage is Golden Connections is one of four central hubs. It should maybe be the Golden Connection occupies one of four central hubs.
There we go.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with you. And if there's a way, if there's a way that you can describe that so that, I mean, yes, it's unknown whether there's the willingness and the funding to complete all the hubs, but it's anything you can do to keep that door open and not cast something in metal in a plaque that closes the door on the future growth of the project is important.
Any other comments?
Thanks for hearing me out.
Thanks, Andy. So what about just changing is to occupies? Does that verbiage flow?
Perfect.
I have a tiny little thing. It might be nitpicky, but do we need a comma after, where it says its placement in Ashlands Railroad District, comma, serves as a historic marker? We do need a comma there?
There is a comma there. I'm wondering if it didn't copy and paste.
I don't think we need a comma there, do we?
I don't think it's necessary there. It seems kind of...
Take it out.
Yeah.
I would take it out. There's no need for it. That's all I have. Thank you.
I'll update this with whatever we decide here. And then, Aaron, who can I share this with to get everyone's approval?
Go ahead and send it to me, and then I'll send it out to the group. We'll take care of it that way. So go ahead and send it to me.
Okay, cool. And then I don't think I caught the piece, Ken, about occupies. Did we decide on that?
I think that works. I didn't hear any objections.
So it's saying Golden Connection occupies?
One of,
okay. Got it.
Aaron, I presume you're going to send it to Parks for their blessing.
So that's coming up here on it's good. A representative from this commission will need to go back before Parks again. I believe that was my understanding from when they saw the initial concept, but they wanted to see the final copy as well.
All right.
Okay, I think we have a plan on that. There's other issues.
I just want to make sure we have this right. I'm still not Golden Connections occupies. What happens after that? How does it read?
We're just substituting the word is with occupies. Golden Connections occupies one of four central hubs.
Got it. Okay, thanks.
Destiny.
There's other issues. Cement or stone base. I think, Joel, didn't you research a stone? You found a?
I did.
That's right. Okay.
I backed off that one.
Okay.
And I sent you a picture of it as well as the Aaron. Aaron, you had at one point talked about the base being cement or stone. And that was a little bit new to us. So we did look, and there is a piece of stone over at Leave Your Mark. It's about 4 feet by 29 inches, and the plaque could go on that. It's a piece of limestone. It weighs 526 pounds. It costs twice that, 50 cents a pound. Let's see if I got the numbers right. It costs about $1,060, and it would also cost about $300 just to set it in place. Mm. And what's not in there is drilling the holes to mount the plaque. And I presume, Aaron, if I'm jumping ahead, let me know, but I presume that you have already put in motion the funding for the plaque as a space holder. And it was a question of whether that has to go to the council.
Yeah, so I've spoken with the staff advisor about that. I haven't yet gotten a memo prepared. I need to get a memo prepared to send it over. It will go to Joe Lessard. The question is whether it will need to go to council for their approval. This is the first time there's been an allocation of public art monies with the new form of government. There's enough funds that are appropriated but unspent for this year. And based on the small amount, the staff advisor, Bill, seemed to think that this might be something just approved without going directly to council for action. But I have not yet gotten that memo prepared. I really wanted to have a solid estimate on what we thought the base and the sign was going to cost first. And it sounds like has the group at large discussed stone versus concrete, or was that, Ken, conversations that you had with your subgroup?
It's just the subgroup so far.
Got it.
So let's entertain the options here. Do we have a quote for just doing a cement base? Do we have any idea? I sort of like the idea of stone, but and that amount seems reasonable to me.
We thought it was the simplest.
Yeah. Do we have consensus on that? I don't think we need a motion for it, but
yeah, I love that idea. Stone would be great.
I think it would be simpler to just set that in there. And do we have Aaron? Go ahead.
Yeah, just quick question. So I got $1,000, roughly $1,000 for the limestone. $300 for its installation. Will the quote for the sign include installing it on the stone, Joel?
That should be pretty easy, assuming they prepare the stone correctly, because they just need to put in holes matching our hole pattern, and then you can use epoxy anchors and just put in threaded inserts and just screw it on. Yeah. And we were talking about left-hand threaded screws, because that's usually what you use in public places, with like a star head bit. So the installation I could do myself. So I don't think that'll cost anything for the sign.
Okay.
And then as far as the three of us went to the site together to look at it. And I mean, if you can, I think Ken, you were saying they deliver the stones only up to a certain amount of footage past the sidewalk or whatever. But okay. I mean, there's easily dollies that could, we could roll that down. I don't know how involved I'm allowed to get from a liability standpoint or whatever, but I'm happy to get involved and just wheel that thing over. And then there's a little piece of equipment you can rent to just like hoist it on and drop it on ourselves and call it a day, and then just bolt the sign on. And then it would take a real strong vandal to walk off with that thing. So I think we're good.
Yeah.
Just as far as the price, so the price of the stone is fixed, but the chap that owns Leave Your Mark said that they can only deliver within 16 feet of the curb. So he would recommend a contractor, and his estimate was about $300 to have a contractor put it on a dolly and move it to the site spot and just set it in place. Now, if Joel could do it without the dolly and just pick it up, it would be great.
I got you. I was thinking that, or maybe we could throw some bribes at Leave Your Mark guy. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're allowed to do that, but, you know, a couple more feet wouldn't hurt.
Yeah.
I think using the contracted services that you've quoted would be best, Ken.
That's my sense, too. It's simpler.
Good that we got somebody sensible here, because I feel like Ken and I would have done something wrong.
Yeah. So, do we have a final estimate for the plaque itself?
No, I can't get that. Now that we have the wording finished, I can actually get that. So if we are fully stamped off on this, QR code's gone, no map, we got the wording, we all love it, boom, I can reach out to people and get it very quickly now.
So when we get that, I guess you need to communicate that to Aaron. So
yeah,
I'll pop that final number. So
absolutely, yeah. And I'll communicate that to Ken too. That way we can merge our two quotes and then be like, this is exactly how much the whole thing's going to cost. Done deal.
So I have a question for Aaron. Aaron, do you have a couple pictures that I sent of the stone?
If I saw that, I don't recall in my inbox. I would like it if you would resend it, please.
All right. Yeah, I didn't see it. I don't know if you sent it to me, Ken, but I just looked for it. I didn't see it either.
I don't know how to do it very well. So I sent it to Aaron and to Stanley, and I thought that could be shared. Stanley, did you get the copy?
I'm not sure I got that.
All right.
I don't remember seeing a picture of a stone.
All right.
In any of your emails, but I don't know.
I'll do it again.
Okay.
And Aaron, am I out of order if I send it to everybody? I don't want to send a email that's not in the rules.
As long as no one replies all, you're fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds like we've got a plan for the plaque. It obviously will not be ready for the dedication ceremony, but that's okay. It'll just show up there when it shows up, I guess.
We can have another party when that gets.
We can have another party. Exactly.
Yeah, that one. That one's gonna be bigger for me, honestly.
Yeah.
Okay. Next item: an update on the Railroad District medallions. Aaron, do you have any update for us on those?
Not much of one. Dale is working with Carl and Michael in Public Works, and he's also been liaising directly with Masterworks. I don't know all of the details, and Dale has a lot more experience with concrete than I do. My understanding is that the technique prescribed by Masterworks is pretty involved, and Dale, I think, was exploring an alternate way of setting them. And my understanding is that he's going to continue to work with Carl and Michael to prepare some drawings that will then enable the bidding process for concrete contractors, because Public Works does have to go out to the bidding process. So that is where it's at right now. I will continue to ask for updates, and I really don't have any insight into how long that bid process for Public Works will take. So okay. I'll continue to keep on top of that and let you guys know.
Great. Thanks, Aaron.
I have a question that's a little arcane. Maybe there's, as my understanding, that when there's construction work, Public Works puts away 1% for art. I think that's in the code, something along those lines. And I'm wondering, with all of the work that's going on with the curb cuts, if 1% of that couldn't be applied to the medallions.
So there is provisions in the code that when the city does certain projects, that a certain percentage is dedicated for public art. What's going on in the right-of-way is, I believe it's associated with the ODOT handicap crossings, and the funding source to that is opaque to me. I can inquire with Public Works, but my guess is this would not be an eligible project that would get those funds.
Okay.
Do those funds ever land into the Arts Commission budget, or are they just a part of the general fund that gets allocated by somebody else?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
The 1%, does that money, I mean, is it real money, or is it just on paper, and does it ever land into the Arts Commission budget?
So I don't know if there's been any qualifying projects in the time that I've been here. One of the things that's crossed my mind was, for instance, there's a water treatment plant that's in been planned for a long time. And I don't recall the answer offhand, but I remember looking into that. And for reasons that I don't recall right now, we are not going to get 1% of $40 million for a public art project. Because there are certain restrictions there. As far as the work going on with making the handicap accessible crossings, I can inquire. But again, I would guess that funding is probably coming from an ineligible source.
So that funding, that 1% is just accumulating somewhere? And
again, I don't think there's been any eligible projects that would have gotten that 1% in the time that I've been here. The most recent one, I think, would have been during the reconstruction of Fire Station 2, but that predates me by a bit. Yeah. So does that answer your question, Ken?
Yes. I thought I might help with installation of the medallions, but beyond that, it would be good if we had visibility whenever that whenever there is a qualifying project. So we would have some sense for what the funds are.
When I worked in San Francisco in public arts, it was usually 1% of new development. So like maintenance and stuff like that, you probably wouldn't get it.
Right.
But if the fire station was newly built or whatever, probably like 1% of that. Because it was like 1% of a new development. So that 1% of that would go to like beautifying or art, you know, beautifying the area of the development. So probably that, but yeah, show us the money. I'm with that.
Right.
Okay. Thanks, Aaron. let's see, goals and action items. There were some additions to the agenda. Ken wanted to talk about how to fund public art. Do you want to get into that now, Ken?
Sure. It may be brief, but my thought is that if somebody wants to make a donation, it's a little bit arcane as to how to find out where that goes and who does it and all of that. But beyond that, our role is advocacy. So I'm wondering if there are ways that we could come up with in the future that would publicize public art as a philanthropic benefit to the city. And we might just think about that, but I believe that we could get more visibility on it. If Peter were here, he would say that several people have given outright bequests to the city. So that process could be made more visible.
Yeah, I think this issue came up before a couple of years ago, and I think the answer I remember is that we can't as a commission fundraise. Is that right, Aaron? I'm trying to remember.
I hesitate to give you a solid yes or no. I don't recall discussing the PAC directly fundraising in the past.
Yeah, this was way back when Sandy was around. I think just when I came on the commission, I asked that question. And my memory is the answer was, well, there's really not a way for us to, as a commission, do that. If somebody comes to the commission and says, I want to support this project, like for example, if somebody came and said, I love John Pugh's project, I'm going to fund it. I think that we can bless that and welcome that. I think there's a precedence in the Japanese Garden was funded by a private individual.
I just looked it up while you were talking, Stanley, and the language in the code is the commission may solicit gifts and bequests of public art or funds to the benefit of the public art collection. I mean, if that isn't fundraising, I don't know what is. I just don't think we've done it before.
Right. Well, that's good to know. That's really good to know.
So going forward at another occasion, I'd like to explore how we do that.
Yeah, that makes me think what we're talking about with First Fridays and, you know, trying to be more visible and transparent in the community, it seems like there's an opportunity. If there was some link to some way that people could donate. Anyway, just a thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something we should be doing. There are communities, I think Seattle is a great example. They've had a couple of benefactors up there. One main one is Virginia Wright. She's from a wealthy timber family, and she funded the outdoor sculpture park and the Seattle waterfront. Multiple sculptures on the grounds of the Seattle Art Museum and Volunteer Park, as well as funding sculptures on the campuses of a bunch of universities. And it was just somebody that has more money than God, and I'm going to spend it on this. And oh my God, wouldn't it be great if we could find somebody like that?
I believe people are out there that would do this.
They ought to be out there somewhere.
Yeah. Not to that degree, but... This, it seems to me, this gives us a pathway to begin to develop contacts and maybe some key individuals.
Right.
I'd like to see us be a mecca for public art. It would improve the tourism and the culture and all of that.
Oh, absolutely. I think one problem we have is citing things. I mean, there's just not a lot of real estate available for public art. So I don't know, that could be a problem. I don't know.
I had mentioned to Jim when the installation took place of Golden Connections, Jim Lewis, I said I was going to, when it comes to the meeting, I was going to ask him if with their geo mapping, if they could give us a working list of all of the public parks that are available, and we could begin to look at it as a mosaic to fill in rather than just being out there.
Okay. Any other comments on that? We've got a couple other items. I think Cassie wanted to talk about how the commission applies the lens of diversity, equity, and inclusion into the work they do. Is that part of the presentation you're going to be doing?
It can be. No, that's not part of the presentation. We were approached by the Racial Equity Social Justice Commission and asked if one of us would attend their June meeting to discuss with them how we apply an equity lens to what we do as PAC.
Yeah.
And I love that this question came up because I don't think I've only been part of PAC for a year, but I've never been part of a conversation in this, you know, at where we actually discuss how are we viewing what we're selecting and how are we using that when we put out a call to artists to select artists and how do we consider what we're putting out to the community in art form and how it represents people from diverse backgrounds. And so I thought it would be great, and Jennifer as well, that we have a conversation about that. And something that had been on my mind for a little while was also to ask about bringing in a land acknowledgement to start our meetings. And when I wrote that to Jennifer, she said, I was thinking the same thing. And we both thought before we do that, having an understanding of what the significance and importance is of a land acknowledgement was essential. And I guess, Steph, that Jennifer had reached out to you as well and asked if there was one and found that there was.
Or a copy of it.
Yeah. So she did forward that along to me as well. So I guess more than anything, Stanley, this is just an open conversation with everyone. You know, and do people, I guess the question I have for us before anybody considers going to the Racial Equity Social Justice Commission is, are we looking through an equity lens? Do we have the awareness of what an equity lens even is? And how do we proceed as a commission with an understanding, a communal understanding of what an equity lens is? And then how do we utilize that? So I think this is more of an open dialogue than me trying to present anything to you.
Does anybody have comments? Some comments on that? I do know that at the beginning of every council meeting, they do a land acknowledgement. And, you know, in some ways, just a second. You have to be really quiet, okay? If you're going to stay. In some ways, I think I'm sort of two minds about that. I think it's great to acknowledge it, but it falls a little bit short when you don't acknowledge the fact that we're on your land and we stole it from you, you know. So you know, I am sort of that always strikes me when I hear that. That there's acknowledgement that we're here, but not what we did. So.
Mm-hmm. From my standpoint, it would be beneficial to do the acknowledgement. I think the history is that the Native American, this is my understanding, Native Americans didn't own the land. They were stewards of it. And we pushed them off it. In any event, maybe we could get the wording that the city uses.
I'm going to drop it into the chat right now.
The wording was developed with a connection with the Native American community. So it wasn't something that was just written by the council.
And it does actually use the word steward of the land, stewards in the Rogue Valley.
Right. I see that.
What do I do? I'm hitting chat, but I don't see those words. I see the golden connections.
Just scroll down. It's there.
Okay.
Hmm.
I need a lesson.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I'm curious about thoughts about the concept of equity lens, and if folks have thoughts about that, or if that we would like to at some point have someone come in and talk to us about that. I'm just curious. I know we all come from very different backgrounds and experiences, so I'm curious about that as well.
Yeah, no, I think that would be good. I think in terms of what we do as a commission, the obvious place to be looking for is whether we give equal opportunity to minority in the selection of public art. And when we do put out an RFQ for proposals, we keep it as open as possible. And, you know, I don't think we ever do or ever could legally stress the fact that we're looking for proposals from people of color. You know, I mean, that I think could be viewed as discriminatory. So I don't know. I mean, to me, that's the obvious place where people are wondering. Let's see, let's go around Ashland and look at all the public art. And, they're all by white people. And I'm not sure that's the case, but it could be. So.
Actually, it's not really the case.
Okay, yeah. That's good. That's good to hear. Yeah. So. Anybody else have any comments?
So do we have enough input here? Do we need to discuss this in May so that we can have somebody go in the June meeting for the Social Justice Commission? Cassie, would you be willing to be that person?
I would be, but I'm if I'm totally honest, I'm not hearing that people, that there is any awareness of, I'm not, I feel like I hear Stanley and I've heard you, Ken, as well talk about the land acknowledgement, but I'm not hearing that we do have an understanding of what an equity lens is, particularly as a commission. So I would go there with really to say we know, unless we want to have a discussion about that and have some kind of awareness of what an equity lens is. And I'm going to also say this is part of my work that I do. I go into a corporation and work with people to discuss developing an awareness of equity and inclusion. And so I feel a little like, I would feel uncomfortable going in, and I would be saying, no, we need some kind of awareness of what equity is and how we're looking at how we select art based on that. So maybe there's more of a discussion we could have in May. Yeah, I'm not really sure. That would be my honest answer. I would be happy to go, but I don't know that I would have a report that we necessarily are.
Well, maybe could a first step be that on the May agenda that maybe Cassie could give a presentation to us that would be similar to what she does for other companies to make us aware exactly what the meaning of a social equity lens is. I'm not really sure I understand what that is.
I would like that. I mean, my thoughts on this would be that our what we consider is what would be put out in an RFQ for artists to be considered, that it's an, you know, equal opportunity for anybody that submits, but, you know, we're kind of beholden to who is submitting. So if that is, you know, all the artists are white male, then how do we open that up to a broader audience? I don't know that that's really in our control, other than that we put the request out to, you know, whoever we can, and maybe we probably you know, we don't want to be exclusive in only putting it out there to a specific group, because then that would defeat the purpose of being equal to all groups. I don't know if that makes sense, but So I would be open. I mean, I think for me, I would want time to look at what our wording is when we send out RFQs and you know, in the past, what we've done. And then, of course, you know, it's the selection panel in the end that it's if the artist has met the requirements. And that then is a whole nother thing. It doesn't include a requirement of being a minority or, you know, what have you. So there's a whole nother thing to consider when we're talking about public art.
Ken?
Well, I'm going to proffer that if we use the words in our RFQs, that we would give due thought to the artist equity lens. If they know what that means, that would be like saying we're an equal opportunity employer, and it would be inviting, hopefully. So I think, to me, there is a pathway there to...
We may already do that. I don't have one in front of me, but I think that... As I remember, there might be some verbiage like
well,
that.
That's kind of what I'm saying is I'd like the opportunity to go back and look and see what it is we put out there, because I mean, of course, I think that we just by virtue of being a public entity, it has to be available and open to anyone, and that we are sensitive to diversity. And but I'd like to see what it says exactly, and then and maybe, you know, in doing so, we all learn about what it is we're including. But in terms of learning from Cassie, what that means, what that looks like, and your expertise,
well,
that would be super helpful.
Yeah, I would be happy to do that. And even like the word equal versus equitable is an interesting, because mm-hmm. the idea is that you actually do solicit minority groups intentionally, especially if it's something like the hub sculpture at the railroad park that's representing the Chinese community, that there would have been a concerted effort to reach out to Chinese artists for that. And then even to consider their piece in a slightly different, from a different perspective than we are considering white artists coming in, and to weigh that as part of the equation that we're evaluating as part of this equitable lens isn't always about it. The goal is equality, but because of the disadvantage for so long, there is actually a kind of a necessary, you're looking at it through the lens of we are going to give a little bit more priority to folks who are representing in their life and in their experience what the art is that we're looking to commission. You know, it's so complex and multifaceted that a presentation wouldn't really even barely touch the tip of the iceberg. But, you know, I think these are good, really, I'm so excited that they asked this, because here we are having this conversation. And I was just thrilled that it came up and that we get to actually say, well, what are we doing and how are we evaluating what we want to put in our community? And are we really reaching out to the organizations that represent the minority groups in the community when we put out an RFQ, you know, are we contacting the different communities of color and minority organizations to make sure that it's reaching all the different people in the community? Mm-hmm. So I think this is exciting, and I would be happy to talk to Ken or Stanley in preparation for next meeting about what the appropriate amount of time is, and maybe even send out a couple things in advance of that for folks to look at. To get us going, so I don't take up so much time in a meeting. And thank you all for listening. And really quickly, I also just talked to Jessica Friedman, and the Say Their Names selection committee, speaking of this, did meet and did pick one piece that they are going to recommend go through the process, and they're planning on coming to the June PAC meeting with that presentation. So just along those kind of lines, that's the update there. And Jennifer asked me if I would be the point person for her with the Say Their Names Coalition since she's stepping down, which I said I would be happy to do. So
that's great. Thank you.
Yeah.
We're almost out of time. There are a few items under goals and action items. The first one is partnership with community arts organization, which is a nice segue. Because Cassie has and I have been working on this list to to translate it from a Word document into a searchable database. And thank you so much, Nasty, for all the work you've done. And to roll that into what you were just talking about, this is the place to find those organizations, find those contact people, make them part of that database. So when there's future projects, we make sure that we hit those groups. So
yeah, that's great.
Community engagement, First Fridays, anything to talk about for that? Ken and Cassie, we're working on that.
I sent to Jennifer, and I believe she sent to each one of you the draft of what we are planning to do. In a nutshell, we have encouraged, but I have only seen the three, Jennifer, Cassie, and Ken, sign up mm-hmm. for presentations on First Friday, which would essentially be a 5 to 10 minute public talk at designated locations. We would publicize that. Peter has agreed to put it on several calendars and on websites. And I was hoping that one of us could be in touch with you, Aaron, and get the announcement into the public utility bills. I recognize that that's only about a third of the city at any one time, but it would be one sentence that says something like a Public Art Commission presentation at Pioneer. Mike, is that his name? And for example, so we need the blessing, I think, of the commission in general to go ahead. We've not really discussed it beyond the draft. Cassie, is that pretty much catch it?
Yeah. The only other thing I would add is that Peter is wonderful, and Ken and I had a meeting with Peter, and he said he was willing to write 5-minute scripts for us. So he has already sent Ken and I for May brief script of about each piece of art that will be it will be the Pioneer little trio there along Pioneer. So that's wonderful to have Peter involved. Is amazing. And it is in the Dropbox. So if you're willing to sign up, we are looking for 3 people for the first Friday in July. But Ken and Jennifer and I are planning on being there for May.
I may be out of town, but I'll take a look because I'd be happy to do it. So
great. It should be really painless because Peter's doing the text and he also has Q&As that follow up. So
yeah, even images that he was going to give us to show people of them working on the various pieces of art.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Peter is an Ashland public resource. He's just
wonderful. Yeah. The one last item, the Ashland High School student intern. I know, Aaron, you've been close to this issue. We can't really have them as an associate member, correct?
Yeah, so I mean, the membership of the commission is laid out by the land or by the adopted ordinance. So you can't just by motion on your own say we want to have a new ex officio member. That would require an amendment to the municipal code. In terms of interns, that's problematic as well due to certain legal liabilities. The difference is that we cannot go and solicit an intern. That's not going to work out. But the difference is that if a student from, for instance, Ashland High School or a student from SOU were to approach you, the PAC, and say, I'm working on a capstone project and want to attend your meetings and be involved. And we've had that sort of involvement before from other high school students. And while that may, you say, well, Aaron, that looks and smells a little bit like an internship. Apparently, it is different because it would be the student initiating the process and they are not formally a part of the commission. And so it's different and apart from you all trying to solicit an intern to do work for you. That's the line, the distinction I needed to make there.
Yeah. Well, I think that would be great. And it puts the impetus on the student themselves. They would need to work out whether they're getting credit for it or not. But that's something they can work out with their instructors. But that sounds like a good option. You know, I think maybe the best, I'm trying to figure out the best way to spread that word, whether we talk to the art teachers. I'm sure that the Jennifer could handle that effort at SOU with some of her students. Maybe I know there's an art teacher at National High School. I'm trying to remember his name.
It's Max, I think. Max.
Yeah. And just say, hey, look, if any of you, here's a potential project, show up for the Arts Commission meetings and, you know. Yeah. So, hey, we're right on time. It's 10 o'clock. Does anybody have anything else? Thank you all for coming.
Good to see you all.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, so long.